Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Razor Riffs with Keith Razor and Alan Lee, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Excellent. Welcome back to the show. We don't have any sponsors this week.
No, that's no problem.
Yeah, but I'm Keith Razor with my trusty sidekick, Alan Lee. Yeah,
who needs sponsors?
Yeah, we got Alan Lee.
Well, I appreciate that. It's very nice. And Megan Jenkins is here.
The beautiful Megan Jenkins, as we like to call her, MJ.
And she is beautiful.
Yes. MJ was not here last week.
Yeah, hey guys. I missed the show.
Oh,
hi. Alan Lee, you're looking dashing as always.
Oh, thank you, my dear.
Kaif, I hear you had a great weekend with Jeremy Hotz. That's pretty awesome, performing for him.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
How'd that go?
Good. I did 6 shows. I bombed on 4 of them.
4 out of 6, that's not too bad.
Yeah, that's pretty good for me. And he offered me a featuring job, so...
Well, there you go.
Yeah, because that's the worst thing when you're a comic and you don't have work. You have no money. So, but yeah, it was fun.
We have no money before we were comics.
Yeah, but no, you know what? This lady actually walked out on my set, and I guess she complained to the improv about me. She said, like, oh, he's too stoned or something. I was like...
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm serious. And I was like... I've never touched weed in my life. And
she
then,
must be very touchy about
it. And the improv came up to me, and they're like, I don't know what she was talking about. You were funny. I was like, I know, but whatever.
But that's what she said, that it was... She thought you were a stoner?
Yeah, she said I was too stoned and drunk and all that stuff.
Wow.
And, you
Sounds
know...
like me.
But, like, Alan, there's something I really wanted to talk to you about, because I was watching the news today, and they caught Mike Frisbee today. Did you hear that?
The criminal.
Yeah, the criminal. So I'm thinking we should tell Bobby about Mike Frisbee, since you're a brilliant improv artist. I'm giving you a fair warning to play along.
I'm with you. Mike Frisbee is well known. In fact, Santa Monica has harbored, and I love that city, if you're out there in Santa Monica, no offense. You know, there's a lot of criminals in that city.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. In fact, after World War II, you know, the Nazis, you know, they were not nice people. A number of them, and this very attractive German girl told me this. She said, do you realize that my great-grandfather and my grandfather, who were Nazis, are living in Santa Monica?
Really?
Yeah, because they love the beach. After the war, they came over.
Okay.
Alan, you're so funny on the microphone. Saying, you just said Nazis very clearly and loud, and everything else is always kind of muffled.
Yeah. Well, you know Made what? I'm sorry. Can you hear everyone
that's
out there?
So much better. That's so much better.
They moved here after World War II. They moved to Santa Monica, where our guest lives.
Yeah.
Bobby Collins lives in Santa Monica.
Oh, that's right. Our guest is the brilliant Bobby Collins. I feel like this microphone sucks.
And Norm, our Norm McDonald, your friend and one of our guests and the great comic, he also lives in Santa Monica.
Yeah, and the thing is Bobby also wrote a book, too.
Yeah.
So I'm, like, really interested in that. And but the Nazi thing confused me, because what does that have to do with Mike Frisbee?
Well, as you know, they're not nice people, the Nazis.
Oh, right.
And maybe I was kind of trying to make that point, is that
I just got a tweet.
They all are in Santa Monica with Frisbee.
I just got a tweet. You want to hear what the tweet says?
Please.
So badly.
Okay, it says, tell Alan not to talk during the Mike Frisbee.
Is that from Ron? That sounds like Ron.
Why not? I want this Frisbee thing to go.
It just doesn't make any sense.
You brought it up, not me.
Yeah, like unless you know it's like a joke. Like no one's gonna.
Oh no,
people
no,
are just
no,
gonna be I, like, what?
Yeah, well, she's got a point. We'll yeah, see
I have a
goes.
Good point. Yeah. Thank you.
You know, we're like what are those trapeze artists in?
I've always thought that. Also.
And you know, there's no net.
Yeah,
I kind of wish
Megan was here last week, because I got a lot of Facebook and Twitter hate because apparently I made Lana Turner cry. No, I wanted what?
To ask Megan if she had listened to
it. Did you listen to the...
I did. I was actually very proud of you guys because I was proud of the fact that you addressed and noticed the creepiness that could possibly happen. And you didn't give that off at all, I thought. And I was very impressed.
We were just being very, very
supportive of her. It was great. And I thought it was a great interview. I don't know how she felt about it, but I mean, it was amazing to listen to because it was very real.
Yeah.
And she seems very cool.
I like that.
And it's definitely a good thing she wasn't in studio because she is very pretty.
She's attractive. Would have been,
yeah.
Very attractive.
Well, my point wasn't to make her cry.
No, I don't think you did.
It doesn't come off like that. And we were supportive of her problem. We weren't like making fun or anything.
Yeah.
No, you guys did great.
I thought it was
I think it was a bit of a catharsis.
I thought it was interesting because like on the news and stuff it says she filed for divorce with Ralphie, but then she told us that Ralphie did.
I just thought that was interesting that came out.
So all right guys, today's guest we have Bobby Collins, and Bobby's a great comedian, but I'm going to let Alan do his intro since he's your hero.
Well, thank you.
How many times have you seen Bobby Collins live?
I would say probably about 3 or 4 times. I'm not saying I was stalking him.
Yeah. Have you ever met him?
No, that's why this is somewhat of a thrill for me.
All right, well, let's talk to Bobby Collins, guys. You got your questions?
I'm ready to go.
All right. You ready, Megan?
I'm ready.
All right. Let's see if we can make Bobby cry.
Jesus.
that's a little mean humor from our host, Keith Reza.
Okay, excellent. It's ringing.
Hello, Bobby.
Hey. Oh, my God.
Best answer I've ever heard.
Oh, hello, Bobby.
Hey, Bobby. It's Keith Reza and the crew, man.
I can tell from his
lips. Hey, look at you guys. It's a shame that we're sharing the planet with so many different types of people.
We need the bleach. We need the chlorine. See, I know his
bits. Right.
Alan, you're
right.
I
know his bits.
The gene pool could use some chlorine. How are you guys doing?
Great. So happy to have you. I mean, you know, he's a New York comic, you know, and lives in, you know, L.A., New York, and he bothered to stop by.
You mean bothered for us to call him?
Well, he bothered to answer.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bobby.
Right. You're very welcome.
Well, Bobby.
Matter of fact, I'm presently in Massachusetts.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, that's my favorite state.
That's a good.
It's good. They're nice people. Very
nice. A little chlorine bleach there, too.
And it's 10 o'clock out there, right?
10 o'clock. Okay. I was just about to watch the All-Star game. I went swimming. I went out for dinner with friends. It's been great. It's just great.
Fantastic.
Because when Bobby and I were texting, he said, text me at 5:45. I was like, okay. And then, like, I got confused with the whole Eastern time thing on the email. So I was like... Wait, the show's at 7:45 and not 80. Yeah.
Well, we're Californians. We don't know stuff like that.
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
I know. It was a little difficult. I was like, should we get a blackboard and some chalk and write this down? I said, Keith, you're a good man, but don't.
This is going awesome.
So, Bobby. my trusty sidekick Alan Lee here, he's one of your biggest fans. He told me he's seen you at the Ice House several times, and he was like so thrilled that we got you. So,
is this a clean show?
It is. No, it's not.
Yeah, you could say whatever you want, pal.
Oh, okay, the Ice House. I kid him because it's like a shithole, but we tease him about it.
It is actually. I agree.
No, they're good to me. I enjoy when I'm home in California. I have a home in New York too, but when I'm home in California, I run to the Hermosa Comedy Magic Club, Ice House.
Beautiful.
Stop in and do if I have to work on some material. In New York, I just run down because I live in the Village. I run down to a place called the Comedy Cellar, and just jump on stage just work out.
The Cellar is like the best venue in New York because it's always packed and it's never closed, right?
Right, but it's a shithole. You know what I mean. It's it seats like 110 people, and it's basically in a cellar.
Yeah. Tiny restrooms.
No, how's that? What
I said? They're tiny restrooms. The restrooms are small. I remember.
He said tiny.
Thank you. I know. I know. And if you're a large man, no, I'm.
And he is. He's a tall
Billy.
Man. He's a tall man.
So, Bobby, we get questions from the Twitterverse. Do you like answering questions from the Twitterverse?
Believe me, he's.
I don't know what the Twitterverse is. I'm old school.
Oh well,
but ask away.
All right. Well, the Twitterverse is like it's kind of like Facebook, but it's called Twitter. I don't know.
Okay.
So we got a few questions. Question number one. Bobby, how come you do not have a Twitter?
Next question.
Yeah. Well, I do of recent, because somebody asked me, because I went for a meeting and they asked me to be a co-host on a show, and then one young guy there, 25 at the meeting, said, "How many Twitter followers do you have?" And I remind him again, the cream rises to the top and shit floats for a while and it sinks. I go with quality. And the guy shut up real quick.
There you go.
That's true.
In other words, look what's on television nowadays. And if this is based on how many Twitter followers you have, I'd rather not have much, because the quality of what you're watching on television is somewhat ridiculous. Don't you think so?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think,
especially if other countries in the world are looking at us like we're the housewives of America and Donald Trump is the mean girl.
There you go.
Well, they're the ones who keep looking, so we're doing something right.
Well, you know, other countries can't get enough of our shit, right?
Well, we imitate a lot of their shows,
too. So it's all, what goes around comes around. I think it's funny.
Yeah.
Right.
What I mean, what changed?
I mean, you have 58% of the population of our country not very educated. That's scary.
It's scary. But I'll say one thing, Bobby. What's your favorite Japanese comic? I mean, I don't have any foreign comics. Do you, Keith?
Yeah, it's so specific.
Why does it have to be Japanese?
Well, I pick a country, Brazil. We can go through the whole UN.
Well, a minute.
All the comics are here.
A minute ago, you were talking about Germany.
Well, Germany. That's a country. I'm just, my point is, how many German comics do you tune in a week or a month? Very few.
Me?
No, I'm the audience. I meant that in a general way.
Right. Again, every comic in other countries want to come to the United States.
Yeah. See?
Keep that in mind.
There you go. And we only have four
which
clubs.
Is kind of scary.
Please, there's a glut in comedy. There's a lot of people doing it, and we don't need... I say close the borders of those comics for at least 10 years.
Oh, God. What's going on now?
Okay, so we have a feeling Alan is voting for Trump or something.
I don't know yet.
Okay.
I could vote for Obama again if he goes for a third term.
All right. Well, that's... I got another Twitter question.
I don't think you should vote, Alan.
So, Bobby...
Why? Who would you vote for, Alan?
Yeah.
You know what? I'm still deciding, and... Bernie Sanders scared me, okay, because I could do the math.
Oh, he'll be dead by Sunday.
Because the college, I don't know how you could pay for the tuition for everybody. Because my mom never graduated college. And I told her if Bernie got in, my mom could go back to school and get her degree.
Yeah.
You know, and so I'm very conflicted.
Bobby, you know what's interesting about Alan Lee is... He admires you so much. He's not only a stand-up comedian, he also used to be a teacher.
Well, you know, I read in your bio that a substitute teacher.
Yeah.
And see, what got me is Bobby did it for a year and got the hell out, and as you know, I stayed in it much longer than Bobby. What a job.
I got to tell you, I was very thankful for it at the time.
Yeah.
Because I took over as a substitute teacher, and then the teacher left, and the head of the history department came in, and I thought I was going to get fired, and he said he wanted to talk to me, And he called me in and he said, "Hey, we have somebody leaving because they're in a pregnancy and this. And would you stay on in a permanent position?" And I said, "Oh, I thought you were going to fire me." I go, "Sure." And, yeah, I was teaching. And my master was U.S. foreign policy.
Ooh.
So, I did it. I did it. And I got to tell you, it was very valuable because here's 30 kids in Buffalo, New York. 30 kids. And I was like the entertainer. I had to show them things that they, you know, in other words, I walked in one day, stood on the desk, rolled my pants up, and during the time I was talking about, I said, "Your parents would wear pants like this. They were called knickers." And just to give them a picture of what it was like then, and it became so real for them. Plus, it enhanced my entertainment qualities, you know?
Oh, they can be an interesting audience. You know.
Oh, they were wonderful. They were captive.
Yeah.
And that really gave me more of an incentive because I wanted to do stand-up. It gave me an incentive that to go out and do it right afterwards. And I remember the first night I did, a buddy of mine came with me, and I spoke so above the audience's head. And then after I got off, after like 9 minutes, nobody was laughing. My friend looked at me and he said, "Bobby, don't give up your day job." And I laughed. I said, no, I see exactly what I did wrong. Instead of looking at it, they were students, and I should bring them along. I was telling them rather than working with them to get there. You know what I mean? As
nice.
An entertainer, it's two things. It's good to, first of all, your vulnerability is your strength.
There you go.
And two, you know, you got to educate as well as make them laugh, entertain. So it was interesting how I learned that big lesson at first, and I was glad it was the first night.
Wow. I like that. That's cool.
That's awesome. It's amazing that you remember the first time you did stand-up, because I don't remember the first time I did stand-up.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I did, because I was at Catch a Rising Star in New York, and let's see, in the place, and they weren't that well known yet, was Freddie Prinze from Chico and the Man. And maybe that's a little before you guys.
No, I know who Freddie Prinze is.
David Brenner was Freddie sitting Prince there. Robin, a guy named Robin Williams that just stopped in. And none of them were really well known. I think Brenner got on like Carson like 3 or 4 times. So he was like the hot shit. Mm-hmm. But I remember sitting there going, "Oh, God, this is my first night. Why are these guys all here? This is like the tryout night." You know, but these guys stopped in to work their stuff. Make the new guys look really bad.
Did you ever run?
It was what?
Oh, go ahead. I was going to ask you a question.
No.
Oh,
go ahead.
I was going to say, did you ever run into Argus Hamilton?
Yeah.
Yeah, we love Argus.
Argus is a great guy.
Yeah,
he's a great guy. When I came out to California, I was doing a sitcom with what the hell was his name? He played Carmine from
Alan should know this one. He's like trivia buffed.
Oh yeah, he played Carmine from. He was a dance guy, Eddie Mecca. He played Carmine on that Norman Lear show with the two girls. I forget the show.
Yes, go on.
And it'll come to
Laverne
you. And. What's it? Laverne and Shirley.
Laverne and Shirley, yeah.
All right, 4 Razor points for Alan.
And we he saw me in a club in New York, and he had already signed this guy, Eddie Mecca, who was a great guy. And we had done a commercial together, me and Eddie Mecca. I did a lot of commercials. And they saw that commercial, and then they sent a guy out to see me perform. Next thing you know, they were asking me if I'd come out to California to work on a sitcom with him. It was Aaron Spelling. And I said yes. And it was, it wasn't Mall Cop. It was like, it was called Rent-A-Cop.
Mm-hmm.
Remember those days?
Yeah.
I came out to California, and I had no place to do my stand-up. And I ended up going up to the Comedy Store as well as the Improv. And I met Argus, and he was a great guy. And he was friendly, and he was helpful, and he knew how to cut through the crap of, you know, of the comics up there, and he was just a solid guy.
Yeah. We had Arius on a couple months ago, and he'd tell us a story, and then what would he finish each story with? He'd be like, "We're not running with wolves or something." I was like, well,
"Is that right?"
Yeah, like, so I was just.
Well, he's got his own. Does he have a column or something in
radio
LA or?
Yeah, he writes way too many jokes, man. I see him on Facebook with all the jokes.
Too many.
Yeah. He writes like 70 a day.
Some guys can really do that. I worked with a guy the other night, and where was in Cleveland three nights ago, Saturday night. And he wrote a book, and he used to write for the Seinfeld show, and Mark Lackey or something.
Was it Fred Stoller?
No, I know Fred. I knew Fred from New York days.
Because Fred wrote a book.
Fred will tell you a famous story of that when I was there that night. You know how he used to do his act? Some psychiatrist that was in the audience came over, gave Fred his card, and he said, "Listen, you really need to seriously talk to somebody, and I can work with you." And I remember he at first was insulted that somebody, but we were crying. We were like, "Oh, tell me you're not having a party in your head. You didn't invite anybody." You know, that's how we looked at.
That sounds just like Fred.
Oh, this is funny.
You see Fred?
Yeah.
He was on our show.
He's been on the show, and I've worked with him several times. I open up for Norm, and right now he's at Norm's feature, so I work with Fred a lot.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He always, my favorite joke of Fred Stoller is, he's like, "So I met this girl, and I said, 'Hey, you want to go back to my place?' And she's like, 'You're not going to kill me, are you?'"
Right.
they go along with.
And he looks like that type. You know, if he lingered with you too long, you'd say, "Nah, this guy's too weird."
Then he's like, "I may kill you, I may not. I don't know." But man,
maybe I shouldn't have told you that shrink story. But I'm surprised he wouldn't tell you that. Oh my God! He was so upset about it.
No, if it makes you feel any better, I don't really talk to him that much. I just say, "Hi, Fred. Where do you want me to bring you up to?"
Right.
You know, because
right.
I have Asperger's, so it's very hard for me to talk to people like Fred because I'm pretty sure he has Asperger's as well. Like he's just very
right.
Dueling Asperger's.
Right. Yeah, so it's like
when
just
you have
awkward.
Two handicaps coming together, it's not going to make one positive straight thing. It's going to go in different directions.
No, it's not like the math plus the.
Well, exactly, because like sometimes like. I don't know, like, if I'll say something, it'll, like, offend him or something. So, like, I just got to the point where I just won't talk to him anymore.
It's tough.
Right. It's easier just to bow out with those type of people.
Yeah, but I really
love... But I always liked Fred. I haven't seen him in a good 20 years.
Yeah, I love Fred, man. He's awesome.
Yeah, he's always a character. I just like characters. Comics paint colors.
Absolutely.
Thank God, because,
absolutely.
God, I look around at the people now that I... grew up with, and they went their ways, and they're business people, very successful, a lot of them, but a lot of them lost their soul, a lot of them, you know, they're just getting older, and there's no zest in their life, or you could tell they're missing something in their eyes, and then they look at you, and you go, "You've just been laughing and having a ball."
Yeah.
Yes, I have.
thank you very much.
See,
that's great. Yeah. I love hearing that. You know, very few people state that.
Yeah.
And he's the zest.
Yeah.
The zest is gone. The carbonation is not in the soda.
Well, see, and you can see it in their eyes.
Well, see, that's like one of the things I like really like about you because, you know, we all know comedy could be a dark world and stuff, and with all this pain and tragic and stuff, you're always positive, you know what I mean? So it's like, it's
right.
Nice. It's nice having that.
Like, I wrote something tonight just with laughing with people. I said, there's a white guy driving a white Corvette down the street. That's, what is it called? A white people power. What is that, white power? What's going on, black?
White lives matter. White lives matter.
Right, then you see a black guy in a black Lincoln, and his car's all pumped up, the music's loud. That's black lives matter. Then you see a Puerto Rican in a souped up Camaro, and you go, "That's a stolen car." You know? You know, you just make fun of what you're seeing. And it, you know, like from your point of view, I grew up in New York, so you know that. Ah, that's dope.
Well, that's funny.
Wow. See, but you can just tell I haven't even perfected it yet. I was just playing with
it
today.
That. I like
white,
that.
White Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter, Puerto Rican guy. That's a stolen guy.
That's great.
I love your joke how you say that, like, you always put God first, family second and career. Then career third.
It's true.
Yeah, but when you do interviews, you take out career and you say a different on each interview I've ever
watched. You say you switch career in one of his interviews?
Yeah, one time you said career third and then, I don't know, I just thought it was funny because I thought you were going to say career.
God first. Because I got to tell you, if you don't have the faith and you don't know God, you know, there's something going to be left out. You know how many people you've met, and not only in life, in this business, that there's, like we talked about, it's not in their eyes. They're soulless.
Yeah.
So God first, then you have your family. God, you know where we're at, your family. That's your roots. That's your guts. My kids, my wife, you know, my relatives, my cousin, my this. That's what makes you who you are. That's what Gay knew the difference between you making the right decision and what and not making the right decision. So, you know, the taking the turn and not taking the right turn. And then your career. Many times I've put my career in front of my family and God, and I always had to get back on where I got off.
Yeah.
So God first, family second, career third. You know, I think most of the best performers, whether it be in stage, movies, whatever, know that to be true, and I really believe in it.
Yeah, they're centered in a spiritual basis, because you know we can get we can get all the stuff that a Porsche, beautiful penthouse with a gorgeous woman in it,
right.
And you know what? I got to rethink that, Tom. just kidding, Bob.
Yeah, right. I got a condom on right now.
I wanted to run this by you. It's a sidebar, but I know you would give me a comment on. There was a show, a game show, and it was called Make Me Laugh. And you know, you remember that show? And it was in the 80s. And you know, the contestant had to sit there, and the comics would come out, and they had to, and she'd lose money, or he would lose money. The contestant would lose money if she laughed, so they had to, like, no matter what the comic did, they had to not laugh. Are you aware of that show? Because I was watching some clips of that, and I don't know why they don't bring that back, because it was the funniest thing to see how hard they worked not to laugh. I mean, some of them actually almost choked and they turned different colors, and it was what a
I remember the show. I didn't watch it because, again, you know, if I'm watching something and if it doesn't appeal to me, like, really quick, I'm turning it off.
Okay, you know? I thought it might have appealed to you, because
I'm the same way. If I can't get into something within, like, 5 minutes, I turn it off, which is why I've never seen Twilight. And
Twilight. I'm not a Twilight. Megan, are you a Twilight fan?
No, I don't like that.
So the three of us, four of us are not.
Hey, so Bobby, is Bob Hope really your favorite comedian?
No, when I was little, I came from Queens, New York, and it was a real poor, matter of fact, real poor. We were poor. Poor people used to come over our house just to feel better about themselves. But we were just poor, and my mother and father, my father traveled 3 hours a day traveling in and out of Manhattan to work. My mother was a waitress, and we kids just took care of ourselves, basically. We knew how to. But I remember the only thing that made them laugh was, like, the Red Skelton show at 8:30 on Tuesday nights. And one day, I just got up, little kid, I said to my mother when she was peeling potatoes, because my father liked French fries, I said to her, hey, Ma, just curious, why'd you name me Bobby? You know, when you're asking these questions of your pet. And my mother, without a beat, she just didn't even look up. She goes, your father really liked Bob Hope. And then I went, Ma, there's a part of me that wants to become a stand-up comedian. And she just went, that's good. That's nice. And just kept peeling the potatoes.
Wow.
So there's a real incentive for a parent to push you.
Well, it's cool because, like, my family is very, very, very poor, but I'm very, very rich in character.
There you go.
Yeah.
Good boy.
Yeah, see, that's a positive spin on things, right?
Yeah, that's good. That's really nice.
Yeah.
But so, you learn a lot when you don't have things and you're poor. And then when you grow up and you see and have things, you really know its proper place and what it really means. It doesn't mean that much. It's what's in someone's heart that means something. If your heart's in the right place, your wallet's full.
Thank you.
I totally agree with that. That's,
yeah, me too.
Bobby, I saw a YouTube clip of this. This must have been early 90s where you were doing stand up and a red haired girl heckled you and you said, you know, if you were dressed in yellow, you should be a pencil.
I think he had blonde hair.
Yeah.
Real blonde, and he was dressed in yellow.
Yeah.
Or the way he looked, and I said, yeah, something to that effect. I don't remember, but I did say something. if you had a dress on that was yellow, you'd look like a number two pencil.
But that comment was just, like, so fast. It was, like, right on the spot. It's like a roast joke. Have you ever considered doing roasting? Like, do you do roasting?
No, I've never done that. Yeah. But you learn growing up, especially in New York, when I first started, you know, hecklers and stuff like that, you knew how to handle it.
Yeah.
You knew how to handle it because that was, one, your protection, and two, it's like, wait a minute, shut the hell up. I don't have that much time up here, and I'm working on stuff. I wrote stuff that I worked hard on, so I'm going to work on it. I don't need a schmuck like you just had an extra couple of drinks to screw me up. You had comeback lines, you know?
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
So what was the difference, like, between in those days till now? Because now it seems like everyone heckles, you know what I mean? And then...
No, I don't get that. Remember, I do a lot of theaters. So somebody's paying $40, $50 to come see you perform. Somebody sitting next to you is not going to... let somebody scream stuff, they're going to shut them up or move, get them thrown out. So you say there's a lot of heckling. I don't see that at all. But every once in a while, if it does come up, say if I stop in a club, I enjoy it because I used to be really good at sparring with an audience.
Yeah,
because that's how I learned coming up.
That's a skill.
So was, growing up, was anyone else in your family like funny like you?
I think my mom was. Matter of fact, I went to see her today. She's 95. But she was a pisser. She was just a pisser. We used to laugh at things. We would keep it from the other kids and my father because they'd probably be all upset at us, what we were laughing at and stuff. So I kind of thought that was pretty cool, having that relationship with my mother.
Oh, that's fantastic. I have the same relationship with my mom.
Is that right?
Yeah, she watched all the comics. I could give you a list. Everyone from Shecky Green, I mean, just all of them. I do remember Foster Brooks. He did the drunk. The Gold Diggers with Dean Martin, and I bet you, nobody ever remembers Stanley Myron Handelman. He was on the Gold Diggers with Dean Martin. Do you remember Stanley Myron Handelman?
I don't remember him. What did he do?
He was a stand-up that was a guest on Dean Martin and the Gold Diggers. And
okay.
Dean, in the middle of the show, would say, well, Stanley has dropped by. And
and he would come out and do stand-up?
Yeah, yeah. It's a little trivia there. But he was one. I'm sure he came out of the Borscht Belt, you know, with Alan King. And,
right.
You know, the whole group, Mason.
I met a lot of them coming up, from Henny Youngman to Alan King, and it was pretty interesting because coming from, again, New York and loving our profession, I was always brought up, take the best and leave the rest. So you saw things about their comedy that was like, or their person, because you can't really separate. And you'd say, too bad he has that quality, because he'd be a much better comic.
Interesting.
Which made him a much better person if he kind of looked at this about himself or that about himself, you know.
That's
growth means change. Change doesn't always mean growth. Mm-hmm. When you grow as a person, mm-hmm. you change things and drop other things.
When you
see comics that are still doing the same crap they've been doing for 20 years, you go, they didn't grow much, did they?
Bobby, how much material do you have? Because comics who do it for a long, like Bobby Slayton, for example, he's one of my best friends, but I asked him how much material he has. He said he only has 2 or 3 hours. And I was like really shocked by that because he's been doing it for like 50 years.
Well, I don't think it's so much a matter of how much material you have. It's remembering it.
Yeah.
I have a lot. And like I started a bit the other night in Cleveland. And I remembered, oh my God, I started to do it. And it just came. And it came so, you know, just from my inner heart.
Mm-hmm.
And it came out so good. And I said, damn it, I haven't done that bit in 10 years. And it just came out at the right time for mm-hmm. the right segment, for the right feeling of the audience. You know, every audience got its personality.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what's going to fit that personality.
Mm-hmm.
I always prided myself on having a gift of, I could peek at an audience behind a curtain and go, oh, wow, we're going to go somewhere tonight. Or, oh, I got to work harder
mm-hmm.
because they just want to, you know, they just want to, me to bring it to them rather than join in and we can go in different directions. And that's okay. Or you look out and you go, oh, this is just a dumb audience. Oh, they're just stupid. Ah, shit. I wanted to work hard tonight, you know, on different things.
Yeah.
So it's okay.
No, that, I'll tell you, you're being so honest here. I mean, that is a, you know, this is like a comedy class here. I mean, that's a pearl of wisdom there, you know, Bobby. I appreciate that. Did you ever work with Joan Rivers or Phyllis Diller, some of the women comics that I like? And when I watched the documentary on Joan Rivers talking about material, she had, you know, those old catalog drawers that you get in the library when they had the
yep.
like her jokes.
She bought a card catalog, and not one, you know, not a whole, you know, shelf of them.
Right.
And
right.
then she opened it, and the cards had her bits. It blew my mind. I mean, I mean that was, I could, you know, she could just pick out a card. Oh, this is what I, and look at it, you know. And
yeah.
anyway, we were talking
yeah.
about material, and obviously not everybody does that. But I found that fascinating that every comic has a way of organizing his material, and that to me, well, I've never seen a card catalog like that. I thought that was amazing. Yeah.
Megan has a question for you, Bobby.
I do,
mate.
Bobby. I'm a big, big fan of Cher and Dolly Parton too, and you've opened both of them. So I'm going to be really fangirlish right now, and I just, what are they like? I got to know.
Oh, I got to be careful here. I've opened for a lot of people, and again, and just your journey as a comic, I was working in a club. I'm just giving you three steps back to jump 10 steps ahead. I was working in a club, and a guy came over to me, Cher's manager, and handed me his card, and he said, here, whoever your people are, have them call me tomorrow. And I said, my people. I thought, my parents, you know? I didn't know. And I was young and naive, but I was just a good comic. And then I went to an agent who was interested in me or talking to me. You know, they all try to bring you along, these agents. You know, oh, yeah, let's keep talking, that crap. And when I was starting, I went to him. And he goes, who gave you this card? And I told him, this guy who, he goes, this guy represents Cher. And he goes, yeah, if we get something out of this, I'll work with you. Well, anyway, I got a big tour with him, 88 city tour from that. And I remember the first time I met her, I was never taken back with people. Again, being a poor guy, I respected everyone and held them high until they showed me different. And she was just a sweet, she was short. Most people think she was really tall because of Sonny. It just made you think how small Sonny was. Sonny must have been a hobbit because she wore heels on her shows, and she did like 10 to 12, only 10 to 12 songs, because she had a lot of that background singers doing stuff and dancers, and which was phenomenal. So it was a big thing. A lot of gays loved her. They came out. And she had a quality about her that... it was just special. It was just special. She was, she would work out like 2 to 3 hours a day. And if we had to take a bus somewhere, she had like a workout gym on her bus. And, I was like, oh my God, I can't work out this. I'll go for a 2-3 mile run. I'll do some sit ups. But I was impressed how, as she was older than me, you know, how she worked it. And she held hands with everyone before the show and said, let's say a prayer to God. And we enjoy these people worked hard and saved their money to come out to see us, and let's give them the best that we can. And I always thought that was really cool. That's right.
That
and again, I lost that. Huh?
That's very cool. That's very a great cool. story.
Bobby, I have a question. Yeah. You've had a lot of people yeah. open for you. Who do you think would be the most successful one?
Well, the guy that's toured with me for the last 2 years in theaters, every year my wife saw him we stopped into a club on Long Island, and my wife came over to me, and she's real picky on comedy, and she's got a real good eye, very similar to my eye, which is funny because I don't know. Well, anyway, she goes, Bobby, come in here, I want you to see this guy, this guy's really funny. And I went, who? Come on, honey, I want to get home. It was late, I had a car service. Bobby, come see him. And I went in, and there was a guy named Chris Roach, and he made me laugh.
Yeah.
And I like somebody in front of me that does 20, 25 minutes of laughter. The audience gets laughed, and then you come out. It's like just putting a glove on them. And it's just, it brings them up to a nice level. And lo and behold, two months ago, he got a new sitcom with Kevin James, an old buddy of mine. He got a new sitcom, I think it's called Kevin Can't Wait. And he plays an ex-cop, and he was an ex-cop, and Kevin's playing an ex-cop.
Wow.
And it's shooting, so he's already called me a couple of dates that I have coming up on Long Island in some theaters. He can't do it because it's during the week, and they're going to be taping.
Oh.
But his name is Chris Roach. You'll hear about him.
Yeah. That's awesome. I thought for sure you were going to say Jimmy Fallon.
Jimmy was the best. Jimmy was, you see how crazy Jimmy gets
yeah.
by doing songs, by doing this? He would get so excited. Why don't we all just, look, why don't we do this? You do this right now. You play the tenor. I'll play. He gets all excited. And you fall into it, and you end up playing his game. And it's we're so totally ridiculous. And it's fun. And it's a pisser. And he does it all the time on television, and people say, oh, he's so funny, he's so great. And I know him, so I'm just saying, he's just being Jimmy, he's a knucklehead.
So he was like that when he opened for you?
Yeah, yeah, he's a knucklehead.
Wow.
A funny knucklehead guy. I get the biggest kick out of him.
I have one last question from the Twitterverse. You released a book titled On the Inside. Can you tell us a little about
yeah.
it? Like, how long did it take you to write it?
Well, you get inspired, you know, whether to write, whether to, you know, whether to, for performance or for writing's sake. And one of my daughters, my oldest one, who I kind of don't like, she's evil. You know, I know evil. This kid's evil. You want to clean her with a chicken. I did that in my show. But she was all upset. My wife's Italian from Italy, and the drama, and I said, what's the matter? And she goes, you got to go talk to your daughter. Your daughter, she's all upset. I go, what happened? She goes, a boy broke up with her. I go, smart kid. Well, the point is, I went in there, and I'm old school. I go, honey, dry your tears. You never lost anything you didn't know. If it was meant to be, he'd be here. If not, let him go. If he comes back, then it's meant to be. Life's too short. Keep your eye on the donut, not the hole. And I walked out. And my wife looked at me, she goes, what was that bullshit? I go, it's not bullshit, it's wisdom. I have a lot of it, but I don't always apply it. She goes, if you're so smart, why don't you write a book? So I did. That inspired me. I sat down, and all the lessons from what goes around comes around. Never get out of the shower to pee. God first, family second, career third, to another about 20 of them. All the basic principles that we've all known in life, and how I've applied them in the comedy world. and the different instances where somebody, you know, and it's, I've changed the names because some people would know who they are, but it's about from club owners to nightclub people to theater people who have tried to screw me, and how you got the take on them first based on the principles that I learned as a kid on the street.
Wow.
And it's proven, you know, I got letters, thousands, I mean, from people, doctors. Man, I read your book and it put me back in touch with something that I think I was getting away from and not in a good direction. Damn, thank you. You know, and things like that. Well, you put me back in touch with who I think I started to lose a lot of myself. Thank you.
Well, I think I'm going to read your book because I'm going through.
I think you'll like it.
Yeah, because I'm going through a lot right now, and maybe that will help me get on
track. What is the title of it?
On the Inside.
On the
Wittisms, Wittisms and Wisdomisms.
Yeah.
It's on Amazon.
Amazon.
Yeah, I think you'll laugh. You can go to BobbyCollins.com. I saw a lot of them there.
Oh, yeah.
But I think you'll laugh a lot. It's funny. I was a little embarrassed. Not embarrassed, thankful, too. And when I was in Cleveland this weekend, and at the end, because I have a special needs child, I have a little daughter that doesn't walk or talk, but to me she speaks volumes, and I must be pretty special if God gave her to me. And a lot of the proceeds goes to her camp. So when I was talking about the book, a lot of people started applauding, and I said, do you have the book? They go, it was wonderful. Thank you so much. Oh, I was like, oh, wow, you got... Which in turn encourages other people. So we sold out of all the books that I brought, and I brought like 300.
Wow!
So it was pretty good. Yeah.
So if I buy two books, will you sign one copy to Alan for me?
Oh, that would be great.
Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
All right, I'll do that, man. That's your Christmas present for me.
I thank you.
Yeah, just be an act all surprised.
He loves you, Alan. He loves you.
Totally, totally, Bobby.
So,
thank you.
Well, Bobby,
very lovable.
We got to go, but is there any way where people could, like, follow you, and or is it, like, a website?
Sure, go to the website, BobbyCollins.com. I'm in Jersey this year. I'm at the where am I? At the Borgata Casino in Atlantic City next week. I'm at the Cutting Room next week in New York City and Atlantic City. You can go to everywhere, and you could purchase a book online. You could read where I'm at. You could follow along where I've been, but not Twitter yet.
Yeah. Well, Alan and I are going to go to your Ice House show.
That's in August.
That's in
August.
Oh, August.
Good. Come over and say hi. Please.
Yeah, definitely.
We'll laugh. We'll sit in the back and we'll talk.
Oh,
all right. That would be awesome, Bobby.
Fantastic.
All right.
Well, thanks for doing the interview.
Nice talking
man.
To you.
All right.
Super.
Thanks for having me. You
Thank
got
you.
It.
All right. Have a good night, pal.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
Wow. That was great.
So, Alan, was that a dream come true for you?
Or? It certainly was. The most enjoyable experience.
Because that's what I do, man. I make dreams come true. You said you wanted Bobby Collins.
Yeah,
I got Bobby Collins.
You're like that Disney character.
I'm like Mickey Mouse.
Ariel.
What?
No, she got it right.
Ariel?
Ariel make dreams come true?
Did she? Tell me.
I was just messing with you, Alan.
I don't know all these characters.
I want to see if you agree with me.
I appease. I've talked about Aladdin.
Aladdin. Yeah.
Oh,
that was a great movie.
Yeah, that was a great movie.
Like
well, regardless, I'm glad I helped you with your dream, man.
Well, you know, that's what we're here
for. Who do you want to interview next?
Support each other's dreams. Well, I tell you, that's a hard question. I can't right off the bat.
Because I have an important announcement I'm going to make on air, but I can't do it.
You can't do it until what?
I can't do it until, I don't know, I'm going
to,
2 weeks.
You're not going to do it tonight?
No.
What's it regarding? Just give us that.
I can't.
Okay.
Well, then.
Because I know you've got a lot of things going.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. You know what? We should get Stephen.
I just want to get all Stephen Wright. Yes,
let's get Stephen Wright.
I got tickets for Stephen Wright on Saturday. I have no one to go with now. You want to come with me?
Yeah. Well, it's in Orange County.
Yeah.
Okay.
Uber it.
I may Uber it. I'll get there. We'll get there.
All right.
I'll swing over to your place.
Well,
JB, you're on call.
There you go. We even have a fellow comic who'll pick me up.
All right. Well, yeah. So give me a list of everyone you want to interview, and I'll do everything I can to get that for you. Because that's what I do.
You have a magic lamp.
Yeah.
And you will and you will rub it.
I will rub it. Megan, same goes to you. Give me a list.
Oh, my God. Megan, oh, I thought you were going to ask me to rub your lamp.
Give me a list of everyone you want to interview. And
done.
I'll, yeah.
Who?
I just said done. Yeah, I'll do it. Yeah.
Some dude named Dunn. Sweet.
No, she done.
I didn't do the Mike Frisbee stuff because I think he wouldn't have thought that was funny.
Yeah, after that was a good decision.
Talking.
We did that with, if I recall, somebody. It wasn't Stoller.
No.
It's right in that. Do you
it
remember?
Was Dwyer.
Yeah, it was Bill Dwyer.
Oh, it was Bill Dwyer.
Yeah. All right, Alan, well, we got to wrap it up. So anything you guys are doing this week, Megan, Alan?
Well, I'm going to go see Stephen Wright.
Oh, you want to be my date?
Let's not get carried away.
All right.
Anything happening, Megan?
No, but you know what, Alan? I got a comment that your voice sounds like Dr. Katz from the Dr. Katz therapist on,
really?
What was that, Comedy Central, I think?
Oh, that's so sweet of you.
Yeah, it was a great show.
Yeah.
Someone wrote in and said that. So
that's so sweet.
In case anyone else agrees.
And a comment, her voice is a total radio voice.
I agree. That's why we hired her.
Yeah,
Thanks, guys.
It really is.
Yeah. So flattering.
All right, guys. Well,
so what do you got going? You're going to keep it a secret until
what? What am I keeping a secret?
Yeah, just give us a hint what this tease is about, so we know what to look forward to.
It doesn't have to be. It can be anything you want, that or anything else.
Let's just say we might have to change the name to Lee Riffs.
Oh.
So I'll leave it at that. All right, guys.
Wow.
I'm Keith Reza. Give it up for my trusty sidekicks, Megan, MJ Jenkins. You have a Twitter?
Yes, I do.
All right. And Alan Lee, one and only.
One and only.
All right, guys. I'm Keith Reza, and we'll see you next time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hi-ho, Silver.
You're listening to Reza Riffs with Keith Reza and Alan Lee right here on LA Talk Radio.